Welcome to the Project Zion podcast. This podcast explores the unique spiritual and theological gifts Community of Christ offers for today's world.
Welcome. I'm your host, Karen Peter, and this is Cup of Joe, part of the Project Zion podcast family, where we chat about all things church history. And today's episode, we're visiting with Reverend Rock Fremont, who lives with his spouse Ernie in Phoenix, Arizona. Rock is a pastor at Shepherd of the Hills United Church of Christ. He's also a spiritual director, a college instructor of a world religions course, I believe. He's an ecumenical and denominational leader and a passionate advocate for justice. And I'm going to add, he is a very good friend. So thank you, Rock, for being with us. Today we're going to talk a little bit about one of his many areas of interest, and that is religious history. And Rock, from our conversations, I have learned, is well-versed not only in religious history in general, but especially in primitive religions or American frontier religions, which our branch of Restoration came from. So that was surprising to me when I learned it, and I was intrigued by it, which brought us to this podcast today. So hi, Rock.
Hi, Karen. Thanks for having me.
Oh, we're so glad that you are willing to come and have a conversation with us. So before we kind of launch into the religious history part, can you tell us a little bit about yourself so our listeners can get to know you?
Sure. Well, you've mentioned quite a bit so far, but I am a pastor in the United Church of Christ. And for listeners that may not be familiar with that denomination, we are a what folks would call a united and uniting church or denomination, or what I would say, a Christian movement. So we are a movement for wholeness in a fragmented world, and made up of four different denominations, actually, originally. So some of those denominations were the Congregationalists, which many of the listeners will probably know a lot about from that Restoration church history. And they went on to merge with a small group of another frontier group of Christians called the O'Kelley Christians to form the Congregational Christian Church. And then my church family, my family came from a small group of German Christians called the Evangelical Church. And they went on to merge with the Reformed Church, the German Reformed Church. And in 1957, all four of those branches merged to form the United Church of Christ. So I grew up in this tradition, grew up in a small church in the Metro Phoenix area that was actually federated with a United Methodist Church. So we were one at the local congregational level. So I really do, as you mentioned already, have a love for ecumenism and being together, walking together, and really asking, you know, what can we do together? So ecumenism is really my passion and where my heart is.
So our listeners will resonate with the movement illustration that you're part of a Christian movement. We too have used that terminology as opposed to denomination. It seems to reflect our journey more effectively. So we have that in common.
I have to say that I stole that movement, a movement for wholeness in a fragmented world. I stole that from our Disciples of Christ Full Communion Partners. That's their tagline, which I just absolutely adore.
So in full disclosure, thank you, Disciples of Christ, for sharing that. So you do live in the greater Phoenix area. How long have you been there?
My family moved here to Phoenix when I was in kindergarten. So I've lived here most of my life.
So you're an almost native.
Yeah. I would say at this point in my life, people would say that I'm a native.
Okay.
I'm used to our heat.
And so you pastor the congregation there at Shepherd of the Hills, and you are married to Ernie. And what else? Do you have hobbies? Do you have other interests?
Well, church history, as you've mentioned, I know I'm kind of a church nerd. So, you know, if I had to say what are my hobbies, I would say liturgical year, church history, probably all of the things that make me a great listener for Project Zion, because I absolutely adore all of your episodes and try to keep up in listening to each and every one. So,
well, that's wonderful feedback, and we appreciate that. We love to hear back from listeners, and we also take suggestions, which I think I was going to ask you before we close. So if you think of anything, we're happy to look at that.
I'll give you some. And honestly, I guess the other thing that is worth mentioning is I also teach world religion as adjunct faculty for our Maricopa County Community College system. So ecumenism and interfaith really are my hobbies and my everything. So when you invited me to come and be on Project Zion, of course I was going to say yes.
Well, we met at an event where you were actually practicing your ecumenical ministries. You attended the Sunstone event at the Phoenix Central Community of Christ a couple of years ago as you were getting to know your parish neighbors. And I happened to be there, which is how we met in that time. So take a few minutes to tell us a little bit about your work in the interfaith and ecumenical communities.
Sure. Well, I just, you know, remembering back to that day specifically, I just became pastor of Shepherd of the Hills United Church of Christ, and they are a local congregation. And I heard about that event and thought, wow, how wonderful. I want to go. I mean, on many levels, on a history level, but in terms of why I was there, it was really more of relationship driven. I'm always looking for opportunities. I think pastors in so many ways are better pastors when they're looking around and asking themselves, you know, where can we work together with other congregations? And even, you know, to go a little bit wider angle, wider lens, how can we work with people of other faiths? You know, that there's a lot that we can agree on as people of faith. And I think if we worked together more, the world would be a very different place.
Indeed. So what would you say to Community of Christ pastors who might be listening, or Community of Christ folks who are just beginning to explore ecumenical or interfaith council participation in their areas?
We're ready. We're ready. You know, many ecumenical councils at this point, as we look around in our world and see institutions that are struggling. A lot of our ecumenical institutions are also struggling. And often they look towards interfaith dialogue as a way forward. So there are a lot of folks that are in, you know, traditional councils of churches that may not even know that the Community of Christ exists. There are other ecumenical organizations like mine here in the Metro Phoenix area, the Arizona Faith Network, which was our old Council of Churches. They decided to rebrand themselves and become an interreligious group. So they're incorporating our not only our LDS friends, but they're also incorporating Muslims and Hindus and people of other from other communities of faith, and looking at just what I mentioned, you know, how can we be better together? And more importantly, how can we work together on things that we agree on? So it's not only that we're ready. I would say that you're ready as well. The Community of Christ is ready. And I know you'll probably ask me this later in the podcast, but I really do think that the Community of Christ has so many gifts to share with the world. But I think more importantly, you have a tremendous wealth of history and opportunities to share that history especially in terms of what I would call being more like Jesus, being welcoming of all people and being more inclusive and helping others in that journey.
Okay. Well, let's dive in then on what that journey has been there. So you do have a lot of interest in religious history, but we have had some wonderful conversations in particular about frontier religious history that has sent me back to the books many times because you are a wealth of information there. But you do have an interest in the history of the Restoration Movement. So where did that come from? And where has it kind of led you as you've explored a little bit more about the branches of Restoration history that became both LDS and Community of Christ?
So I think it originally came from my confirmation class. We confirm in junior high. Most of our mainline Protestant traditions really confirm our faith at the junior high, sometimes high school level. And my first pastor, he had a love for church history, and I think he shared that with me. He absolutely shared that with me. But in doing that, you know, especially being part of a local congregation that was part of two different church traditions, both United Methodist and UCC, history was a big part of who we were at the local level, and we had a lot of it since we had two denominations to talk about. And of course, within the United Methodist tradition, within the Methodist tradition on a whole, there's a lot of history there, and most of that history connects with that Second Great Awakening movement within the United States, and so many connections with the Restoration Church in terms of Methodism, and then more importantly, on my own side of the United Church of Christ with those O'Kelly Christians that also had Methodist roots, but they were one of those movements, one of those Churches of Christ movements early on, or groupings of Christians that were journeying together and trying to ask bigger questions about, you know, how can we work together? I mean, I think that that's something that people don't often talk about when we talk about the Restoration Movement on a whole, in terms of other denominations or other movements that evolved during that time. But one of those key pieces for that movement was being a united church. And so then I think you're trying to get more personal and maybe know me. And so at a personal level, specifically with the Joseph Smith story, I'll just go right into that. I am, as you mentioned, I have a spouse, Ernie. And so that's a same-sex relationship. And you know, like many people that are struggling with coming out, I was in that confirmation class and struggling. And I remember talking about the Restoration tradition and different streams of that tradition. And of course, living in the Metro Phoenix area, we are surrounded by the LDS tradition. And my mom's family actually married into an LDS family. So I grew up going to family dinners and having the missionaries at those dinners, and would always get into religious conversations with them, of course. And it was really exciting for me as a young person, kind of being a church nerd early on, and having the ability to just connect with another young person. You know, the missionaries, they were older than I was, but, you know, they were always up for a religious conversation. And I just found that so magical. And so I really began to relate to the Joseph Smith story, specifically in the first vision, I think, is really where I connected, because you know, you have Joseph Smith at the, you know, as the three volume history of Journey of a People.
Thank you for the plug.
Says, he talks about Joseph Smith's this vision, and you know, a young person between 14 and 15 years old having this vision, and as a young gay man struggling with acceptance and being concerned with, you know, would the church accept me? Now, many may not know the United Church of Christ is a very inclusive tradition. We're very progressive in terms of social witness. We were one of the first denominations to ordain an openly gay person back in 1972, a man named William Johnson. We were one of the first churches to ordain a woman into Christian ministry. So really on the front in terms of making our church a better place and more welcoming for all people early on. So as I heard more and more about this Joseph Smith story, I couldn't help but relate to it. So in that book, I just wrote down one thing. You know, in Joseph Smith's story, he says that he was swallowed up by the divine. Divine's my word, but to be swallowed up by the divine, well, who doesn't want that? I want to be swallowed up by the divine.
Especially when you are struggling with, am I included?
You know, absolutely.
Do I have worth? Will I be valued? Yeah.
Absolutely. And so, you know, I just related so much to the Joseph Smith story, especially also relating to the United Methodist in our United Methodist history and to the John Wesley story of Wesley's heart being strangely warmed. You know, these wonderful conversion experiences. Like, who doesn't want to be converted? Who doesn't want to have that experience? And so I could just relate so much to that story as a young gay man and asking myself, what is my place in the institution? Now, to bring that forward, when I came out to my mom, she did not accept me like I hoped that she would at that time. And out of all places, she put me in the car and she took me to the church. And she set me down in front of the pastor and she said, "You deal with him." And so the pastor asked a few questions. He asked, you know, when did I know? And we had a long conversation. And, you know, really all I really remember him saying was that you are a beloved child of God. And I don't think he said this, but this is what I heard, and this is what I continue to play out in my mind today. You know, God doesn't make trash. And I heard that, and you know, so in an age where so many people are exiting the institutional church, or so many of these institutions that so many of us have been hurt by, you know, I had a radically different experience. You know, my experience was being welcomed and accepted by the institution, and told that I was loved. And that institution continued to nourish me throughout my life. And then ultimately, of course, I decided to give my life to that institution.
Where you relive that invitation and welcome on a daily basis, not just in your congregation, but as I've seen you participate with us in Community of Christ and invite us to participate with you in interfaith and interreligious activities. So
absolutely. One thing that we didn't mention is I was a prison chaplain for the Arizona Department of Corrections and served two units there. One of them was their condemned row or death row. And every opportunity that I had to go into that place, you know, I reminded myself, but for the grace of God, there go I. And okay. And so the opportunity to share that grace, or as that three-volume series says it, you know, to journey as a people. I mean, that's an amazing title because that's who we are as people of faith. Not only the Church of Christ, not only the United Church of Christ, but to have the opportunity to share that radical hospitality with all people is a tremendous privilege and a challenge for us today.
In the midst,
it challenges us to go into places that may not, that we might not feel. We feel that they may not accept us, like councils of churches. I would hope that any council of church would accept the community of Christ, and I know they would. But I know that sometimes that history is a struggle, and like with any religious tradition, you know, people have ideas about something they might have heard about anything. And, you know, there's a challenge there for us to share who we are and.
Well, and who we are in that uniting way.
Yes.
So I want to connect a little bit. When you were speaking earlier about growing up in your tradition and the different churches uniting together, that's a really point of commonality that we have with other traditions. In the Restoration Movement, you see that over and over again. You see small churches uniting with what had become Joseph Smith's movement and his new church. At that time, I think it was the Church of Jesus Christ. I'd have to go back and read the book again with all the different names that it had. But over and over again, we find people, small churches, coming and uniting because that was what was happening at the time. Right? It's not just a unique thing to the Restoration. It was all these other groups uniting into other ways as well. And so we were very much a part of a bigger picture, just like now we're part of the bigger ecumenical and interfaith picture.
I think that one thing that may be different within the mainline Protestant tradition, often churches come together out of, you know, from an early perspective in ecumenical history, a lot of that early ecumenical witness, it was churches coming together, Christians coming together to be in mission together, to actually do things, be in ministry together, which is a wonderful, instigator for us to be together. You know, how can we work together to make the world a better place? But unfortunately, in many ways, you know, the ecumenical movement has lost a lot of its oomph in the world because, you know, many things that bring us together now are out of weakness. You know, so how can we merge the institution? You know, how can we bring our institutions together to better serve those that are in our pews? I think Ramsey, one of the archbishops of Canterbury and leaders of the Anglican Communion, he said that the church is the only institution that is to serve those who are not its members. And I think, you know, that's something that we as Christians just to be need to be mindful of, more mindful. You know, often we sit in our pews and we think that the church, we forget that we are the church, but we think that the church as an institution is to serve our needs.
Yes, we do hear that. And thank you for that reminder about our true call. I think it was William Temple that said a church not engaged in mission is not Christian.
You're right, Archbishop Temple.
All right. And Tony Shivala Smith, if you're listening, there's a shout out to you. I remembered that from seminary. So
that's amazing.
Surprised that came out. Yeah. So with all of your study and reading in the primitive traditions and the Restoration Movement, and you have read Mark Scheer's 3-volume Journey of a People, what bits have been interesting to you, or do you find strains of still kind of resonant in Christian community today?
I think that the primary emphasis for me in terms of the Restoration Movement and as I look at my own denomination, one of the quotes, we worked with an advertising agency back in the 1990s to come up with an entire branding campaign because we're a wonderful, inclusive church, much like the community of Christ in so many ways, but we had a name problem. And so instead of changing our name, which I would really love to do, we decided, well, how can we better articulate who we are? Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that came out of that was to use this quote that God is still speaking. And then also never place a period where God has placed a comma, an old Gracie Allen quote out of all things. And I think that if there was one gift or one area that I find so important in terms of the restoration tradition is, especially in community of Christ, is that, you know, never place a period where God has placed a comma, that God is still speaking. And so we, you know, in the United Church of Christ tradition, we find that God is still speaking. That quote actually comes from the Pilgrim's pastor when he sent the Pilgrims, or when the Pilgrims came to the Americas. He said that that God is still speaking through his holy word, And so this idea that there's still more light, there's still more breadth and depth in our, not only our scriptural tradition, but in our individual traditions, you know, that God is still speaking. And as you read the history, the journey of a people, it's throughout.
Enduring principles.
Yes.
Right. So continuing revelation or the ongoing epiphany, whatever other liturgical language we want to use, that's still what we live out in our movement. Yeah.
And I think that really popped out for me with your one of the recent podcasts by, was it Locke McKay?
Locke Mackay.
Mm-hmm. When he talked about that that first vision of Joseph Smith, but specifically looking at that as a conversion experience, and then specifically when he talks about those videos and what people hear in those videos, you know,
yes, yeah,
and being more open to other traditions, and you know, how can we share this sacred story to a new generation?
I think that ties in so well with what you said about thinking the church is there to serve us. We also think the church is there to speak just to us, as opposed to us figuring out how to share what God has brought in our experience with others.
So, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, and I just think of, you know, people that might be listening to this you know, my story specifically, and saying, wow, I mean, the Joseph Smith story.
Well, I'm thinking that. I thought it the first time you and I talked about this.
Had something to say to this gay little kid, you know, this scared junior high student that's trying to figure out, you know, if I'm okay. That's an amazing, I mean, I think that's something that we as all people of faith are called to. You know, it's not that we're not relevant, but I do think that we have to learn new ways of engaging our story and making that story, sharing that story in a relevant way with a new generation, because those stories continue to speak. And of course, I'm going to say that because I love history, but, you know, as we know, if we don't know our history, we'll repeat it.
So outside of our historical presence, which is how you encountered us to begin with in Community of Christ, when did you first encounter in real life Community of Christ outside of research and study?
I think it was in 2015. I went to the Parliament in Salt Lake City.
The Parliament of World Religions.
And I was so excited to see that the Community of Christ was there with a booth. And of course, I always heard about the old RLDS church. As soon as I read about that tradition and asked LDS friends, of course, they knew nothing about, or acted as if they knew nothing about that tradition. And I, of course, was very interested in that tradition, especially once I realized, maybe looked at the website and saw that you all ordained both women and then later on, of course, LGBT people. Of course, I wanted to learn more, but was never really able to connect. And so out of all people to connect with, to have the opportunity to meet President Vesey and have my picture taken with him and see that he was so open and accessible.
We've heard other people state that as something that was of interest. Say more about that.
Well, I think I'm a big Richard Rohr fan, and you know, I know others have said this as well. I think Karl Barth may have said it first, but you know, how do we share love? It's by sharing our presence. And so just that ability to walk up to someone, and it might help that he's, where is he from? Tennessee, right?
He is.
You know, so, you know, as he would say, good Tennessee boy, you know, I feel like that, you know, just gushes out, you know, that hospitality, that being welcoming. You know, he's someone that you would meet, and, you know, I felt he may not remember me from anybody else, but, you know, my feeling was is that he would forever remember me. I mean, yeah. He knows people. He's a people person. And that was just so wonderful to have that opportunity to meet him and to learn more about the community of Christ from community of Christ folks. And I also went on to serve on the board for the Arizona Interfaith Movement. And many folks might know Eldred Spain.
Sure.
And so Eldred and I have been friends now for many years, and I've had a good opportunity to learn more about the community of Christ through Eldred. And, you know, and honestly, through his ministry as well. You know, I think of that St. Francis quote, or the quote that's attributed to Francis, where, you know, we hear that to preach the gospel at all times, and if necessary, use words. And honestly, I know it may not feel this way, but my limited experience with the community of Christ in terms of people, everyone that I've met from community of Christ, they've all been good people, as my grandma would say. Y'all are good people.
We'll take that. We'll take that as a blessing from you, Rock. Thank you. So you had held up your Journey of a People volumes there. And I think it was last year you messaged me a photo just out of the blue. I get this photo from you. And it's a photo of the three-volume history, Journey of a People. And the caption was, "Look what came today." And I was so impressed that you had gotten that. So did you glean any new insights from that text as you went through and read some of that?
Well, I will say that Do you remember that? I'm sure you remember that. What was it, a 10-volume, 9-volume series?
Oh, the blue one. Yeah.
And so somebody told me about that series along the way. So I get on Herald House and look at the website, and I can't remember what the price tag was at the time, but they were outrageously expensive for me. Wherever I was on my journey at that time, they were expensive. And I called Herald House. And maybe I shouldn't say this. The person on the other line, on the other end of the phone, said, "Oh, well, you know, you might call the Old Stone Church?"
Stone Church, yeah.
Stone Church. Mm-hmm.
It's and one of our congregations.
They have a used bookstore, or they have used books for sale. And so you might call and see if you could get a used set of those. So I called, and I think it was maybe a week later after leaving a voicemail. A week later, somebody returns my call, and they sold me a set of those. So I had that old traditional set. And of course, they were really difficult to...
They were dense.
Yeah.
They were really dense. And
that was
tiny,
a lot.
Tiny font, so hard to read and a lot of words.
So I still have that set.
Oh, goodness.
It's, you know, it's wonderful and it's a great story. But then when I heard that there was a new history coming, and I think you may have told me that it was coming out, I called Harold House this time and I purchased the set, and I was so excited when they came, and even more excited as I, you know, kind of opened them up and mined them. But specifically what stands out for me in terms of what Mark does in those is gives us a real sense of history, and more importantly, what was happening during a specific time. So time and place.
The context.
Yeah. So having the context is everything, you know, so it's not just a story that's stuck in time. It's a story that becomes relevant, and relevant, maybe not personally relevant. I mean, although especially the early history, as you can tell, did, you know, become very personal for me. I think that it becomes relevant in terms of historical context of who we are as an American people. And I think that's probably why the restoration movement on a whole historically is so fascinating for me, is that we begin to see these homegrown American churches and, you know, really, I mean, I think they would all say historically trying to get back to something that has some depth, you know, trying to go back to something, although I feel, you know, that it's also something new, you know, because there is a, and I think they'd be, I think those historical characters in our history would also be comfortable with this, is that, you know, the Holy Spirit, the Spirit is doing something among us.
So to go back to something and yet on the cusp of something new is kind of where we are right now in the church, where we've been living online using Zoom for all of our interactions. And a lot of us are wondering, when do we get to go back into our buildings and back into meeting in the way that we used to? And yet in reality, we recognize that somehow we're on the cusp of something new. And our journey is taking us in a completely different direction.
Who knew that our journey would go this way 3 months ago? We host exchange students, and 2 years ago, one of our exchange students came from Italy. So we probably had better sight of what the new way was looking like a little earlier than most Americans, as we were worried about one of our sons, our Italian son, caught up in this in Italy of dealing, you know, earlier with this than we needed to. But I think more importantly, that this is something to be lived into. You know, for as awful as this time is on so many levels, it's also very exciting in terms of what we're doing and what we're able to do in terms of engagement. Ernie, speaking of church nerds, my spouse is really annoyed with me sometimes on Sunday because I'm like, oh, where are we going to go to church today? You know, so we'll watch my service, which we do pre-recorded elements throughout the week. And so Sunday morning, we'll watch my church service, but yet I'll say, oh, John Wesley's chapel in London is doing a service. Do you want to watch that? And he's like, no.
How many of these do I have to watch?
Right. And but, you know, amazing things have happened in terms of technology. And I think that it's important that we as church recognize that, you know, we need not go back to the way things were. I mean, this is a new mission field, a new way of being. I don't know that I ever need to go back to meeting with my church council, for instance, in person. Like, let's do it via Zoom. Mm-hmm. We've even talked about the way conferences might look.
Right.
You know, we probably do, you know, a lot of business here in the virtual world. But what that means is when we do come back to being together, I think that those ways of being together will be much more intentional. And definitely when we talk about presence, you know, we show our love. I think that our ways of being together physically will be very different and more intentional now. And it's important that we don't go back to the same way with that either. You know, I think that there are ways of being together that will be very different, and ways of being present to each other. You know, I can't count the number of times where I have my smartphone on the table at a meeting and I'm multitasking, you know, whereas now I'm craving to be with other people. I don't want to go back to trying to multitask and be present to my phone and to an email or to a text message and to the folks that are with me. I mean,
so for a long time, I think we have taken our being together for granted when we come to church. It has been either an obligation or a duty or a habit, and we come to church for a lot of different reasons that aren't always because we want to connect spiritually with one another and with the divine. So now, when we come together, it's like right now, right here, we have to really love each other.
Absolutely.
So is that not part of the restoration movement in finding people to connect with? I mean, communitarianism, all these other things were happening. People were trying to find all these new ways to connect in the frontier of this country. And here we are doing it again.
And to make it more accessible. I mean, I think that the accessibility, I've struggled a lot with privilege during this time. And those that don't have access, so to ask bigger questions in terms of how can we help folks and get them online, get them connected. I can't tell you how many, you know, folks that are over 80, over 90, a few hundred plus folks that I've connected to Zoom and just opened an entire new world for them. As we continue to live into what this reality will be, at least for the, upcoming months, it's so important to ask the question, who's not with us?
Right. Who's being left out?
Yes.
So from a community, a religious tradition, a religious community that often does not reflect on how we are seen by those outside of our tradition. What do you see when you look at Community of Christ now?
Well, that might be a scary question for some folks, but I see a vibrant community of faith, and to be very succinct, a community of faith that's able to transition and to speak to our times and to this place. Maybe season would be a great way to describe that, to speak to the season and to actually really physically be with people. You know, I would also just add, since we're talking about technology, I know at least here in Phoenix, a lot of the Community of Christ congregations were some of the earliest to, transition to the virtual world. And just the ability to pivot, I think is just, it's not only needed today, it's also connected with our history, as a people. And part of this journey that we're on.
The bigger journey.
Absolutely. And, when we're talking about reaching out to different folks, specifically with, I hate to go back to women's ordination, the acceptance of our LGBTQ siblings. Those are things that I know that the global church for you looks very different you know, that's not the same reality for many of us in the mainline, where we're just national churches. But there are many mainline traditions. So just a little bit about that. The ELCA, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, they're the largest Lutheran body in the United States. They ordain women, and they also ordain LGBTQ folks. Presbyterian Church USA, they're the largest Presbyterian body in the U.S. They do the same. United Church of Christ does the same, and so does the Episcopal Church. And, you know, I think that as we look at the world, we'll begin to see that we're not all that different. And you know, there's something called the Lund Principle in ecumenism. And that Lund Principle is about, it's about ecumenical relations or relations between Christians. And the idea is that it affirms this idea that churches should act together in all matters, except those which where we find deep differences of conviction, specifically, where we have to act separately. But as I look around, I mean, there's so much that we as people of faith share in common, and it really is time, in my opinion, in my humble opinion, that we come out of our silos and do more together, because that really connects with that scripture of the ecumenical world that we use in John 17:21, that they were Jesus prays that we all might be one. And the tagline that we often forget is that the world may believe, you know, so it's through our unity. We're already one. I mean, that's most of the ecumenical world would affirm that. We're already one. We're one church. It's we that so often need to atone for that sin of separateness. You know, I talk about sin in terms of being separated, like St. Augustine did. And I think that, you know, that's maybe the biggest sin for me is this idea that we're somehow separate. And going back to the importance of where can we work together? What can we do together?
Like this podcast.
Absolutely. And you know, so that really connects to the world. As I speak to young people that are, you know, 18, 19, 20, sometimes I'll have a 27, 28-year-old in a community college class. You ask them about Buddhism, they're excited. They want to know more. You ask them about the Sikh faith. Many may not know about that faith, but as soon as we talk about Sikhism and I have a Sikh come in to talk to them, they're interested. Hinduism, they're interested. Christianity, the body, you know, just the whole body changes and they're not interested. And so many people have a lot of ideas. A lot of young people have a lot of ideas about what Christianity is about because, you know, honestly, we have hurt a lot of people. And that hurt, you know, generations have passed that hurt down. And we just have at least two generations of people that are not connected to any religious tradition now. You know, but belief in God remains very high. And you know, as I speak to young people, there's still many young people that have no idea that there are churches out there that are welcoming of LGBTQ people or welcoming of women in ministry. So, you know, some of us, it might be old, you know, we may not want to continue to talk about those things, but it becomes more important when we talk to young people because, you know, people have no idea that there are churches out there that are fully inclusive and welcoming of all people.
Yeah. That are loving. Yeah. Thanks, Rock. So you did mention a little while ago that you are a Project Zion listener, and we're happy to take suggestions or requests for topics if you happen to have any.
Well, I love the liturgical year. So anything with liturgy or worship, or liturgical year, I'm a big fan of. As you mentioned, and in the very beginning, I am a spiritual director. So anything about spiritual companioning, would also love that. And more importantly, kind of church history stuff. I love church history stuff, but
this is why we're friends, Rock.
specifically, I would love to know more about, you know, you guys lost a giant this year in Dale Luffman. And I never had the opportunity. He and I became friends on Facebook and we met to connect over the phone. And, you know, I have a lot of ecumenical contacts in many institutions, National Council of Churches, Churches Uniting in Christ, both on the national levels, and heard so many wonderful things about Dale and specifically about the journey of the community of Christ into becoming full members of the National Councils of Churches. I would love to not lose sight of that history. You know, Dale would have been the one to, of course, share that history. So I don't know who does that now, but, you know, to just not lose sight of his legacy.
I'm making notes as you're sharing here.
Okay, I'm sorry.
You might hear some of these coming to a Project Zion episode in the future. So I have very much appreciated knowing you, Rock, and being on this Christian journey together and even the broader journey of faith together to be a sister and brother in Christ. And so I want to give you the opportunity for any closing comments. But first, I want to let our listeners know that you have been enjoying your beverage during this episode out of your Project Zion Emma mug.
I just wish everybody could see it.
Maybe we'll put a picture on the website. So, Brittany, if you're listening, we'll get a picture of an Emma mug and put it up there. But I have seen that in your office, and it just makes me very happy. So I want to thank you for being with us here. But do you have any closing comments for our listeners before we go?
You know, the only comment that I have is the community of Christ is such a rich tradition. I really do love the history of the restoration, and as I've said already, continue to do what you do best in sharing the love of the divine with all people and being a welcoming, more just, more inclusive, forgiving people. I mean, that's when I talk about Jesus, those are the things that I hold up, and those are the marks for me of what it means to be a Jesus people, as the presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church here in the United States would say. And more importantly, make some phone calls. You know, look up some of those churches that I suggested, either the United Church of Christ, the Presbyterian Church USA, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, maybe the Episcopal Church. Look and see what church is maybe near your congregation and make a phone call. Don't be afraid. You know, we want to have a relationship. And as I've said many times in this podcast, we really are better together. And just brainstorm. How can we work together?
Let's be at one.
Absolutely.
Right. Absolutely. Well, thank you again, Rock, for doing this. It took me a couple of requests to get you to agree, but I'm so glad you did. So for our listeners, thank you for being with us today on Project Zion. This has been Cup of Joe with Reverend Rock Fremont from Phoenix, Arizona. I'm Karen Peter. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, Karen.
Thanks for listening to Project Zion Podcast. Subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcast, Stitcher, or whatever podcast streaming service you use, and while you are there, give us a 5-star rating. Project Zion Podcast is sponsored by Latter-day Seeker Ministries of Community of Christ. The views and opinions expressed in this episode are of those speaking and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Latter-day Seeker Ministries or Community of Christ. The music has been graciously provided by Dave Hines.